is going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you are listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. It is the Nico Show for Monday, January 22nd, 2018, the first show of the new year. Ladies and gentlemen, beautiful people, thank you for once again joining me, your host with the most, your MC of PC. Is PC a word? Podcast? It is now, but you know, we're not. We are, this might be a PC, but we are not PC. That's really a confusing catchphrase. I'm going to rewrite that one. I'm going to send that one back to the shop. See if we can do a quick tune-up on that. Well, we'll get the catchphrase down. It's the Nico Show. How you doing? Oh, so great to be back. Lots to get to today. Lots to tackle. So much going on in the world and in my personal life. World events that I can give my sizzling hot takes on. So much to catch up on, and I'm glad that you are here for every step of the way. Hopefully I can get through this in an hour, but this might go long. I might get a little indulgent. I know it's hard to believe. I may indulge in some Nico over the next 90 minutes or so. So bear with me. Here we go. We're going to start, though, with the most basic of topics, the most futile, the going back to the well, as we always do this time of year. That's right. Ba-ba-ba-ba, doo-doo, doo-doo, chick-a-doo, chick-a-doo. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The Patriots win again. Oh, it's getting boring. It's getting boring. It is getting endlessly predictable. There seems to be no end in sight for how predictable every NFL playoffs results every single freaking year. And you know, it would be easy to come on here, as a lot of hacky sports talk radio hosts have done over the last 6 hours or so. It would be very easy to come on and just rant and complain and yell and say, when is it going to be enough? When is all this winning going to stop? As our president suggested on a rally stage a couple of months ago, please, Mr. President, stop with all this winning. We can't take it. It's too much winning. That's what's happening with the New England Patriots. And again, it would be easy to come on here and to rant and to complain and to play the victim, to talk about the cheaters up in Foxborough, Massachusetts. It would be easy to come on here and mourn yet another fallen team. Another talented, young, hopeful team that has been completely demolished by the warpath that is the New England Patriots in the postseason. The Jacksonville Jaguars, so close but yet so far, their lives will never be the same. Because here comes Tom Brady at age 40, 12 stitches in his thumb, rumors swirling about the turmoil in his locker room, a coach that no longer supports him, an owner that does, but at the cost of a young, promising talent, a trainer that, according to some editorials, not all, not the ones that actually know what they're talking about, but some editorials saying that this might be the end of the Patriots dynasty. This show may be over, but oh no, yet again, another incredible fourth quarter comeback, a miracle finish, and it doesn't even seem like a miracle anymore, although it is a miraculous end to this football game. We treat it as the status quo because it is the status quo. And again, it would be easy to come on here and complain about it, but I won't. Oh no, this Jets fan has made peace with his aggressor, ladies and gentlemen. Like a kidnapped victim dealing with Stockholm Syndrome, I have come to accept the abuse that I've taken by these monsters. And I'm ready to move on like an adult, like the better man that I am, giving respect and admiration to the team that deserves it, and to try to make sense of it on my podcast here. Because there is no point in complaining anymore about these Patriots victories. There's no point in even rooting for any other outcome, because the more things change, the more they stay the same. The Patriots dynasty is here to stay for at least another 3 years, maybe more. Who the hell knows? Here's what I want to talk about when it comes to these games, because there were two football games yesterday. One was quite exciting. One was quite boring. But I think we learned similar lessons from both. I want to talk about success. And more specifically, I want to talk about people who are forced to deal with success. Because although I believe you can learn a lot about someone through their failures, you can learn a lot about someone when they're knocked down and kicked to the curb and stomped all over, how they rise up from that adversity is a very important mark of a man or a woman. You can learn a lot about a person from when they are forced to deal with adversity, but I also believe a measure of a man can be taken quite effectively by how they deal with success. Yesterday's football games were indicative of this very principle. And I want to take this conversation and perhaps parlay it into another conversation about my life in just a little bit. But what I want to focus on from that Patriots-Jaguars game is very simple. And it should be abundantly obvious to you. And I think on some level it was abundantly obvious to a lot of seasoned football watchers during the fourth quarter of yesterday's game. Because what we saw yesterday out of Jacksonville and New England is not indicative of how talented those two teams were. It's not about athleticism or youth or energy or vibrancy. Because if you're asking me or anybody that was watching that game yesterday, just purely by the eye test, the talent was not even close. Jacksonville is a better football team than the New England Patriots. Their defense is full of young stars that force big plays. They make big plays on defense, big turnovers. Miles Jack has this incredible stripped fumble. Blake Bortles actually looked pretty good yesterday. He didn't look great, but he looked pretty good. He had some athletic plays, some pretty good throws. You saw receivers and tight ends that were getting the job done on the Jacksonville offense. And Leonard Fournette, although didn't have any big runs, is still a more athletic and talented running back than anybody on the New England roster. And what you saw out of New England's defense for most of that game was, I don't know, guys that couldn't quite keep up. They didn't have the speed on the outside. They couldn't get the pressure. And they allowed 20 points to Blake Bortles on the road. In terms of talent, the New England roster had no business winning that game yesterday. But when push came to shove in the fourth quarter, what you saw were two very important factors that decided this game. Because if you looked at the numbers too, they were fairly evenly matched. What you saw was a team with experience and poise and maturity, understand how to deal with adversity, and a young, inexperienced, immature team that did not know how to handle success. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the most important things, one of the most important life lessons that we all must contend with at some point in our adulthood. At some point when we grow up and we want to become functional adults in this world, and more specifically successful adults in our career and our personal life, what have you, we all must learn how to deal with success. And if we don't learn how to deal with success, then we're not going to have that success for all that long. Jacksonville was in command for the vast majority of that game yesterday. They were just quicker. They were just more athletic. It was three and out after three and out after three and out. Brady was not moving the ball on them. But what happened when they took, just in Patriots terms, in the context of a Patriots game, a modest lead? They took a modest lead over the Patriots. They were up 14-3 for a while. Then the Patriots scored at the end of the second half. It was 14-10. And then by the end of the game, Jacksonville had extended the lead to, or actually, was it 14-10? It might have been 13-10. That by the end of the game, Jacksonville had extended the lead to 20-10 in the fourth quarter. Had even forced the Patriots to a 3rd-and-18. One that, of course, was converted to Danny Amendola. They took a modest lead over the Patriots. Blake Bortles was playing just well enough to squeak by. And what did they do when it counted? What did it do when the game was on the line? What did coach Doug Marrone and quarterback Blake Bortles and offensive coordinator, whatever the hell his name is, and what did every one of those young, inexperienced players on the Jacksonville Jaguars roster do yesterday with that little taste of success? They took their foot off the gas and they played scared. They didn't play to win, they played not to lose. Let me tell you the moment yesterday that for me defined the Jacksonville Jaguars' approach to the AFC Championship game. It was the one moment that it doesn't seem like anybody is talking about today. I've been watching a lot of these sports talk shows. I've been watching my First Takes and my Colin Cowherds and my Mike and Mikes. And I've been following it pretty closely, as I do after big games like this. And I haven't seen this very moment talked about all that much. It was the second quarter, the first half of that game. Brady had just scored his late second quarter touchdown that seems to define his career. The Patriots had put themselves back in sniffing distance of the lead. And there's 50 seconds left on the clock. Jacksonville has two timeouts. They're about to get the ball again to start off the second half. But there's time left to put points on the board. And what did Doug Marrone and Blake Bortles and the offensive coordinators and whoever the hell is calling the plays for Jacksonville, I don't know, some kid's nephew, I'm sure. Apparently it was bring your nephew to work day during the AFC Championship game. That's who was helping out the offensive coordinator yesterday. Whoever made this decision decided to take a knee. And myself and who I was watching the game with, my brother and my father, and I'm sure millions of fans across the country's jaw hit the floor. They were aghast. They were disgusted in some households. And they said in unison, "What? You're playing the New England Patriots? You have a modest one-score lead, not even a touchdown lead. You have a modest four-point lead. It's the end of this, the first half. You have to step on these guys' throats if you want to beat them. I mean, you watched the Super Bowl last year, didn't you? You can see exactly what this guy does in the second half. What Bill Belichick does in the second half after he makes adjustments. After they tire out the opposing defense a little bit. You've seen the comebacks. Time and time and time again on the world's biggest stage. And it's the second quarter. And you have the ball with two timeouts and 50 seconds left. And you don't even want to play? Folks, at that very moment, I said to myself, this game is over. And this wasn't based on the two teams that I was watching, because the two teams that I were watching were not even close in terms of matchup. I mean, Jacksonville was the better team yesterday. They were just better. They were just more exciting. And if it was any other quarterback and any other coach playing against them, they would have smoked their opponent. But this happens with the Patriots, and the Patriots know that this happens to them. They are more than aware of how these young, inexperienced teams play against them. They're counting on the fact that you're going to play scared. They're counting on the fact that when you get a taste of victory, when you can smell the Super Bowl, just get a sniff of it, just see it on the horizon, You're going to change your entire approach. You're going to lose that hunger. You're going to lose that spark, that sense of urgency. And the New England Patriots and Tom Brady at age 40, 17 years into his career, is never going to lose that hunger. He's as hungry as ever before. When they get a lead on you, they step on your throat. They punch you in the teeth. And they make you regret even getting on the plane to come play them. Jacksonville was never going to win that game yesterday, no matter how many plays went in their favor. No matter how many turnovers they got on defense. No matter how many throws, tight throws that Blake Bortles made yesterday. I like to make fun of Blake Bortles. He played very well for his team. No matter what they did, it was never going to be enough. Because the other team just wants it more. It's a cliche, but it's true. They know how to deal with success. They know how to keep working even harder once they achieve that success. And every opponent that comes their way, they get complacent like children. Like people that have never experienced the glory that they have before. Minnesota, by the way, did a similar thing in that Eagles game yesterday. I mean, Philly blew them out. Philly absolutely crushed them. And it's not because Nick Foles is a superstar. God knows he's a backup quarterback and will be for the rest of his career. Philly is talented. They have guys on defense that are scrappy. They have a good offensive line, good offensive weapons. Carson Wentz or no, they are a very good football team. And Minnesota, after a taste of glory, after a miracle play to end the Saints game, a buzzer beater last week, one of the great moments in their franchise's history. They got a sniff of the good life. They got to take a vacation to Cloud 9 for a week, and they got complacent. They were not ready for Philly. They took it for granted. Success is a difficult thing to deal with, because once you get just a taste of it, a sliver of it, it's easy to forget how you got there. It's easy to lose the hunger. Relighting that fire is difficult. That inspiration, that spark, that edge. So easy to forget about it. New England never does. And by the way, the great people in your life, and I'm talking about the great people that you will meet in your days. The guy at your company that keeps getting the promotion, the friend that is happily married and has had great success in his relationships. The reason why those people are successful, the reason why you will always perceive their life to be better than yours, is because they know how to deal with success. When they settle down and get married, they don't stop working at their marriage. When they have kids, they don't stop parenting. When they go to work, they don't stop putting in extra hours, overtime. They don't look for they don't stop looking for the next thing. They keep going and going and going and going and going, because a little bit of success is not enough. It's a life lesson as well as a football lesson. And it happens to be a lesson that I am rapidly learning in my personal life as well. Segway! I'm so good at this, aren't I? I'm really getting pretty good at this podcasting thing. I should try to do this more often. It's a lesson I'm learning. And this kind of worked out well. I think I talked about this a little bit for the New Year's resolution show. As much as I hate New Year's resolutions, they're always cheesy. They're very, very stupid, very, very cheesy. And do not take this as me following through on any New Year's resolution, because I feel like this would have been a decision that I would have made anyway. I have not been good at dealing with success. I've never been that guy. I've been a guy that gets complacent very easily. I am easily satisfied. because I'm not a guy with a lot of strife. I'm not a guy that has a lot of complaints about life. It's very easy when given a little bit of comfort to really wrap myself up in it. When I find a job that I like, when I find friends that I enjoy being around, when I do well at a particular school in a particular class, it's easy to just coast on after that. Because life's pretty fun. Life is pretty damn easy if you choose not to challenge yourself. That rut of complacency is really easy to fall into. And I've done that. I have over my 22 years on this planet. And this is not to say that I've experienced any significant success, because I haven't. I've had little victories along the way. I've had, brownie points rewarded to me over the years. And I've done pretty good at what I have applied myself at. The challenges I have taken on, I've excelled at. And one of those challenges happens to be my job. I'm good at my job. I know I'm good at my job because others tell me I'm good at my job. And I've been rewarded for it. I've been at my job now for a year and a half. It's been my first foray into the professional workspace, into media. My first actual office gig. And it's gone quite well. I enjoy the people that I work with, for the most part. I enjoy the people that I work with. I like what I do. I'm good at what I do. It's become easy and comfortable for me. And I understand I'm saying this all in the present tense when I should be saying it in the past tense, because, folks, this week I quit my job. I am now blissfully unemployed. I am now blissfully fun-employed. Nico DiGregorio, back on the market, baby. Oh, yeah. Give your boy a holler. He needs work. Yes, I quit my job. I am now once again a full-time student. I am back to I am back to the classroom. My notepad, my pen, a shiny red apple for my professors. I'm gonna put it right on their desk. Taking my lunchbox, going to recess. It's the school days yet again. Yeah, I quit my job. I know this might be shocking for some of you, maybe less shocking for others. But here's the deal, everybody. God damn it, had I become complacent. I became complacent. And quite frankly, I was working at this job for about 4 to 5 months longer than I should have been. I was unhappy for a while. I was telling myself that everything was A-okay because it was A-okay. Things were going well. The bills were getting paid. I had a little spending money on the side. I was in no danger of ever losing this job. As a matter of fact, I was in a position to probably get a raise pretty soon, to get a promotion, to keep flourishing, to keep moving up the ladder, and to get my young adult life started on the right foot. But to be quite frank, this little germ of success, this taste of what it was like to be a working adult in the real world at age 22, led to a fair amount of complacency. Complacency that kept me at this gig for like 4 to 5 months longer than I really wanted to be there. I wasn't happy, and I wasn't honest with myself about it. I was telling myself that everything was A-okay. Those around me were telling me that it was A-okay. But once I took a good hard look in this old heart of mine, you know, that thing right next to the black hole in the middle of my chest, what I realized is that I was not happy with just carrying on as usual. I was just not happy where I was. I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't feeling challenged. I wasn't feeling inspired or pushed or ultimately I did not feel like I was changing in any meaningful way. And so what I did 2 weeks ago is I gave my 2 week notice. And, certain people at this company, you know, were less than satisfied with the decision. And I was offered more money. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of any of this because that's kind of tacky. And God knows, if you look at the album artwork for this podcast, it's tacky enough on the Nico Show. But I was offered more money, a substantial amount more, as a matter of fact. And I went to all the important people in my life, the committee that I run everything by. You know, it's kind of like a committee in Congress. You know, they're like the experts on this sort of thing. And I always consult them. I go to my board. I go to my advisors. And most of them, not all of them, but most of them said, listen, Nico, we're all in favor of you being happy with your life, but goddamn, that's a lot of money to be making at your age. And if you took it, you'd really be in a good position for at least the next decade or so. Student loans are coming up. You're thinking about moving out pretty soon. There's going to be rent to pay. There's going to be other responsibilities. As an adult, maybe you should consider taking this here thing, sucking it up, and carrying forward. And Lord knows this caused a lot of turmoil in my life for the past 2 weeks. And I'm not saying this to toot my own horn. Quite the contrary. It's possible that I made the wrong call here. But I thought to myself, if I'm already making decisions for a paycheck, if I'm already at age 22, I'm not even out of college yet, I'm already making the safe call. I'm already, you know, just resting on my laurels, sitting down, crossing my legs, enough's enough here. If I'm already taking a knee at the end of the second quarter, to use a really hokey metaphor, if I'm already doing that, how am I ever going to get where I want to be? How am I ever going to achieve great success if I can't deal with this little amount of success at this age? You got to take risks. You got to push yourself. You can't lose the hunger. And I felt that way in my life. I felt like I was doing something that I wasn't happy with, that I wasn't fulfilled with. I felt the wheels just slowing down, coming to a screeching halt, was just taking my foot off the gas. So that happened this week. And the reaction has been mixed. It just has been. And certain people in my life have been supportive, and actually everybody has been supportive. I shouldn't say that. Everybody has been very supportive. I have great people in my life, but many, and I mean many, have disagreed with the decision, have advised me otherwise, have, you know, been a bit skeptical, and I understand their skepticism. I really do. So I'll be talking about that over the next couple of weeks. Here's the good news. Nico's back, baby. You podcast listeners are in for a treat, because the Nico Show is starting back up again, stronger and better than ever before. I'm going to be doing this once a week again. I'm going to have all the time in the world to podcast. It's going to be so much fun. But we're going to talk about this decision. We're going to talk about exactly where I'm at with it all, because I'm sure there are many out there that are curious to see how this is going to play out. You know, this is an interesting and unique situation for a lot of people, specifically at this age. You know, a lot of people that are my age, and I consider this, you know, the maybe 18 to 24 to 26 demographic, millennials, fellow millennials like me, you know, are experiencing getting jobs and experiencing the struggle of trying to get your foot in the door. But very few have experienced just quitting a job. And I'm not talking about your local Dairy Queen either. Just hanging up the apron and saying, I'm moving away from soft serve. Time to get a job at Carvel. I'm not talking about that type of quitting. I'm talking about you're in a good position to be fairly happy and stable. Stability for the rest of your life. And you're just going to throw it all away because it doesn't feel right, because your gut is telling you otherwise. Yeah, this is a new one. It's a new one for me. I'm sure it's a new one for a lot of you out there. And I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to talk you through exactly all the stages of what I'm feeling. If I regret this decision, I'm going to come on here and I'm going to tell you that I regretted the decision. Absolutely 100%. I will come on and be honest with you. God damn it, why did I leave? God damn it, I was doing so well. Why didn't I listen to so-and-so? who walked me through all of the numbers, who told me how much my student loan payments were going to be every month. You know, we're pricing out mortgage payments. All my accountant friends. It's funny. Once their finances are not at stake, once they're given advice on somebody else's wallet, all of a sudden everybody becomes an accountant. I got friends who, like, 6 months ago couldn't tell me what a 401k was. It's amazing. All of a sudden, you know, they're buying Bitcoin and Litecoin. They're mining for cryptocurrency. And when your wallet is involved, man, they just love to tell you exactly what you should do with your life. It's crazy. Meanwhile, they just dropped $500 at the bar on Friday. They just got VIP bottle service in Vegas. Lecturing you on what you should do for your paycheck. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. No, listen, a lot of people have been supportive. And I guess that's my little lesson for today. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm still trying to figure this out myself. As I said, I am not the New England Patriots. I've been fairly bad at dealing with success. But, it's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be a wild ride, and I'll update you every step of the way. And thank you, as always, for coming on this journey with me. It means the absolute world. Okay, enough of that conversation. Enough of that talk. It's time to get even deeper. Oh, yeah, you thought you were done? You thought you had got as heavy as we were going to get today? Oh, no. We're going to the trenches for this podcast. Deeper and deeper we go into our souls. We're exploring ourselves, ladies and gentlemen, with another just doozy of a conversation after this musical break. Brace yourselves. Enough of the Tom Brady takes. No more fantasy football. No more gambling talk. We're back on sexual assault. It's a tough conversation, but one that will hopefully become more clear and more meaningful after this here musical break. The Nico Show's coming back. I hope you do too. I had such an interesting conversation that turned into a full-fledged shouting match the other day, as most of my conversations do, with a number of my friends, two of which were Mike Cosentini and Alex Lawson, my co-hosts on the Think Tank program, a podcast that we have not done in quite some time, but one that was really fun to do, and hopefully I'll have more time to do it now that I am, as I said before, fun employed. We had card night on Saturday. This is a common occurrence among many males across the country. A Saturday night may be referred to as card night, where, a bunch of idiots with beers and poker chips decide to play stupid card games with one another as they exchange stories of the glory days or yell about the NFL. I mean, that's basically what every poker night is across the country. And here's the thing. Most poker nights, there's cigars, there's visors, there's sunglasses, and there's nothing but good times. But at my poker nights with my nerdy friends, and when I say nerd, I mean nerd. I just have total losers that surround me all the time. I have curated my social circle so precisely. And yes, I know you're all listening to this right now. Fuck you guys. Listen, total bums. And we're not only bums, we're bums that pretend to be intellectuals. And we're bums that on a Saturday night, rather than going out and hitting the club and acting as each other's wingmen and finding some lovely ladies to sweep off their feet, now we're sitting at home, we're playing cards, and we're yelling about sexual assault in Hollywood. And we're pretending that we're, you know, to actually make headway. We're acting like our conversation in the basement of Mike's house is actually pushing the conversation forward in any meaningful way. It's ridiculous. It's silly. It's dangerous is what it is. It's dangerous. But we have it anyway. And I took away from that conversation a number of very interesting points. And I actually think, you know, although it was a debate and although my debate style tends to be a lot of yelling and not a lot of concession, you know, I was pushing my agenda, so to speak, and I did have a point of view and I was attempting to convince my drunk idiots of this point of view. But, you know, I also learned a lot. I also gleaned some interesting points from those that I was debating with. And so I will attempt to recreate that conversation on here because I think it is a meaningful contribution to what has been a very difficult issue for people to tackle across the country and at this particular moment in time. So the conversation started with this dude, Larry Nassar. Larry Nassar is, by any definition, and I mean any definition, a total and complete monster. By prison rules, he's a total and complete monster. To anybody in society, that anybody that has a heart or a soul understands Larry Nassar, the U.S. gymnastics coach who sexually assaulted and, I guess, hard R raped several young girls that admired him, that looked up to him, that called him coach. He is a monster. He's a total and complete monster. He is going to be going away for a long time. He is currently experiencing a sentencing hearing. He has been convicted, I believe, of seven to eight counts of sexual harassment and sexual assault, sexual misconduct, and will be going away probably for the rest of his life. He is currently being sentenced for what many anticipate to be a life sentence. And as is fairly common for trials of this nature, several of Larry Nassar's victims are taking to the stand to look their aggressor in the eye and to describe what had been done to them at a young age. One of those women is Allie Raisman, who is a gymnast that I believe was on the U.S. gymnastics team at the last Olympics, if not the Olympics before then. Allie Raisman had a very high-profile monologue in the courtroom looking at Larry Nassar and calling out not only him for his horrific behavior, but also calling out U.S. gymnastics, calling out others in positions of authority that may have knew something and didn't say anything, or if they didn't know anything, they didn't think to look. It perpetuates this cycle of sexual misconduct. It's a common theme here. It's not necessarily these men in positions of power taking advantage of those positions. There's a larger story. That's only one piece of the puzzle. It's also about all of those people that may have known something, that may have been in a position to stop this madness and did nothing to do so. And we were talking about Larry Nassar, who again is a monster, who deserves to go to prison for the rest of his life, if not receive a more harsh punishment for his crimes, preying on our most innocent members of society, those least able to defend themselves and ruining an element of their lives forever. Someone like this deserves the worst, just the absolute worst treatment for however many days they have left on this planet. But we were talking about a letter that he wrote to the judge of his sentencing hearing asking that the camera crews be removed from the courtroom as the victims went and faced their aggressor. He asked that the media stop making a circus out of his hearing, that he just be sentenced, be given his punishment, and allowed to carry on with whatever semblance of a life he has left. He specifically referenced the Raisman monologue. I shouldn't call it a monologue. That's not accurate. The Raisman testimony, her words to Nassar, and said that enough is enough here. This is becoming way too much. This is getting way too much publicity, and this is no longer the U.S. judicial system carrying out justice. This is a media shit show, essentially. And I think it was Alex that brought this up. And what he said is that Nassar, kind of had a point here. That this is becoming way too much. This is beyond fair and due process. Although he had already been convicted for his crimes, to have this media presence at the sentencing hearing may skew things. It may be overblown. It's uncalled for. This is justice gone amok. This is chaos. And although this guy is a monster, he too deserves fair and due process under the law. And this conversation evolved a little bit, and we got to talking about a number of different things, a lot of different elements of this case, as well as others across the country. And this conversation sort of became about this entire hashtag MeToo movement. It became about all of these allegations of sexual assault and sexual harassment and the best ways to go about fighting for these causes. Because although literally 100% of people agree that rape and sexual harassment are bad, that they are acts of evil, that they deserve to be fought, deserve to be prosecuted, and need to come to an end. It's literally 100% of people agree on this. We seem to not be having real conversations about prevention. We don't exactly agree on how we should fight these things, the best way to go about it, what will be effective and ineffective. And we haven't done a lot of reflection on how we're talking about this issue. It seems like a lot of lip service. That's how it's felt to me. And perhaps you agree. But I'm watching all these award shows, and I'm looking at all these interviews and reading all these think pieces, and there's a bunch of celebrities that are patting themselves on the back because they're all wearing the same lapel pin. Everybody's saying enough's enough, time's up, we're going to the streets, we're doing the Women's March. And I get it, it's a lot of lip service, it's a lot of, you know, feel-good symbolic representations of our ideologies. But in terms of actual recourse, in terms of actually getting down to the nitty-gritty, as the host of the HQ app says before every game, I'm not seeing a lot of results here. And perhaps more alarmingly, I'm not seeing a ton of introspection on the part of protesters, on the part of activists. I'm not seeing all those people looking themselves in the mirror and asking themselves, truly, are we doing the right thing here? Are we doing what's best? Are we making sure that justice is served in the appropriate way? And are we making sure that we don't become the very people that we're fighting? Are we doing right by those that have been victimized? And are we prosecuting the enemy in the correct way? Or are we being totally irresponsible? It just sort of seems like everybody's running wild with this issue. Everybody's decided exactly what side's the correct side to be on. Everybody, with total moral justification, has determined the best course of action, has followed through on that best course of action with total disregard for the consequences. Let me be a little more specific. It feels like we're all out for blood. It feels like everyone, and I'm not doubting the sincerity of activists and of protesters and all of the minds and all of the people behind the Me Too movement. I'm not doubting their sincerity or their passion. But it seems to me that we're at a place now where we're out for blood, where we want to see the next guy fall. And it's become all out war. It has become a lustful vengeance, a truly lustful vengeance, where justice is not totally served until it's carried out by the court of public opinion. Until a man loses his job, his reputation is smeared with a label of rapist or sexual harasser. It's not, it's beyond just the justice system. It's beyond the branch of government that that enforces law and order, right? Their justice is not enough. It's not enough for a man to be locked away and put behind bars. They must be confronted with their crimes, dead in the eye. They must be publicly shamed for the world to see. And it's now our responsibility. It's not the responsibility of police, of the courts, of a jury, of a judge. It's not their job to make sure these men don't walk amongst us. It's not their job to carry out justice. It's now ours. I think it's really dangerous. I think it's bad for a free society. I think it's bad for democracy. I truly do. And to a certain extent, it might be a bit dangerous for the victims. This might be a dangerous way of carrying out justice as far as the victims are concerned. Because fuck guys like Larry Nassar. This is not about him. I mean, he deserves probably everything he's getting. He just does. He deserves to be locked away. He needs to be kept away from our society so he can never commit these types of crimes again. It's true. But as far as we're concerned, as far as the little girls or now the grown women that are giving their testimony and calling this man out for the crimes committed toward them, is this actually bringing them solace? I find it hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that this is an appropriate way of dealing with trauma. That this course of action will do anything to help the healing process. I don't see it. And from the very little that I've read on the topic, which is, let's be honest, like nothing, virtually nothing. I'm an idiot with a podcast. I'm not a psychologist. But the little that I have, the little information that I've been able to glean on this topic does not support this being a healthy way of dealing with trauma. But more broadly, I think this mob mentality that we found ourselves in is going to lead to some very bad things. Because it's no longer good enough to know that these men have been brought to justice. It's no longer good enough for their lives to be over. Now we have to drag them through the streets. We have to brand them with a scarlet letter, and we have to make them pay for their crimes in a very public way. It's not dangerous yet. So far, it's working quite well. So far, the court of public opinion has identified a number of high-profile targets that don't deserve to be in a workplace, don't deserve to surround themselves with women, quite frankly, because they have not learned how to conduct themselves properly. For now, we're getting all of the bad guys. But this lust for blood is not going to end. It's not going to stop. We're going to keep wanting more heads. And throughout history, we've seen examples of this not working. As a matter of fact, it's never worked. Revenge is never the best way to prosecute crime. Revenge is not a way to run a free society. It's an ugly emotion and it's wrong. And to be honest with you, we're kind of seeing it this week with the Aziz Ansari case. This is something, as a matter of fact, that we talked about the other night. This led to a big debate. But this Aziz Ansari story, this babe.net blog post, essentially, that was published about Aziz Ansari that was supposed to be this bombshell about his sexual misconduct. About how even he, this young man who has declared himself an ally of women's rights, who has done much in his professional life to promote women and their causes, while behind closed doors, he has a sinister sexual relationship. It was a gross act of journalism, this story. It was a disgusting act of journalism. And it's the job of any respectable journalist, including this blogger, whatever the hell her name is, It's the job of any respectable journalist to wade out stories like this from ever going public, because she knew exactly what the consequence was going to be here. She knew exactly how this story would affect Aziz's career. Now, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said already. It's probably been, this issue has been talked to death. And we've went back to the well on this time and time again. I'm not saying anything particularly original. But the Aziz incident, wherever you fall on it, is an example of this mob mentality gone awry. We are so thirsty for the blood of these men. We are so thirsty to bring these people to justice. And in some cases, we're thirsty for the clicks, because we know that hashtag Me Too is not just a label for activism. It is a viral trend. We're so thirsty for blood that a lot of innocent men are probably going to get caught in the crosshairs on this one. It's scary. It truly is. And I'm seeing where this is all going. A lot of justice still needs to be served. And by the way, the justice system has let us down time and time again. The fact that Harvey Weinstein was able to conduct himself in this manner for the majority of his career is disgraceful. It's a disgrace to our justice system, and we have to get better. We simply do. But again, this public shaming, this lust is it has gone too far, and it's going to continue to go even farther. It really is. Not about Larry Nassar. Not about Kevin Spacey. It's not, you know, not about any of these monsters. It's about us. It's about being better. It's about conducting ourselves in a principled manner. It's about being fair and just and morally sound. It's about doing the right thing. And I just don't think that, although our intentions are pure, that we're going about this in the right way. I just don't see it. And it's funny, for conversations like this one, when we're talking about issues that are so complex and so much bigger than all of us, it's so hard for us to wrap our heads around it. And I want to err on the side of people that are smarter than me. You know, I go around at times like this looking for, you know, our best philosophers, our moral authorities, those that can speak about issues like this. And for me, that person is Dave Chappelle. At least one of those people, one of those philosophical minds is Dave Chappelle. I'm going to read a quote from his latest Netflix special, The Bird Revelation, performed at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles to a crowd of no more than 100 people, a small venue, a very rough set. And by rough, I mean just not refined, thrown together at the last minute, did not have, you know, was not perfectly timed, did not have all the laughs at the right spot, is a messy, messy comedy special, but one that absolutely changed my way of thinking on this issue. Completely and totally. Chappelle here is talking about how women in the Me Too movement have inspired fear in their aggressors. Here's the quote. "All the bad guys are scared, and that's good. But the minute they're not scared anymore, it'll get worse than it was before. Fear does not make lasting peace. Ask black people. What this city really needs, without irony, I'll say this, the cure for LA is in South Africa. You motherfuckers need truth and reconciliation with one another. The end of the apartheid should have been a fucking bloodbath by any metric in human history, and it wasn't. The only reason it wasn't is because Desmond Tutu and Mandela and all these guys figured out that if a system is corrupt, then the people who adhere to the system and are incentivized by that system are not criminals. They are victims. The system itself must be tried. But because of how the system works, it's so compartmentalized as far as information. The only way we can figure out what the system is if everyone says what they did. Tell them how you participated. This quote not only changed my mind, it rocked my fucking world. It really did. It blew me away. And it got me thinking about this entire movement, about human nature in general. Because it is so easy to pat ourselves on the back and say we're doing the right thing here. Because everybody agrees, rape is bad. It's really bad. But man, if you're a part of the system, if you're adhering to that system, you are not evil. You're a victim of that system. The system itself must be prosecuted. And making examples of men, of individual cases, going for their heads, their reputations, their livelihoods, simply pursuing them and instilling fear is not enough. Fear does not lead to lasting peace. And similarly, revenge does not lead to lasting peace. The enemy that we're fighting is much larger than these individual monsters. The Larry Nassers of the world, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. It's the Woody Allens of the world, the Roman Polanskis of the world. It's bigger than all of them. And until we take our eye off of that distraction, until we quench our lust for blood, and until we stop this madness, we're never going to fix the system. It's only going to come back worse than it ever was before. And my God, Dave Chappelle. My God. If you haven't watched those two Netflix specials, by the way, they're a must watch. They're an absolute must watch. Not just as acts of comedy, not just as an entertaining hour-long experience of laughter. It is a philosophical ride. It will shake the way you see the world, and it is among the best intellectual content that I've seen in any art form over the last several years. Just incredible. And there we go. Have I offended enough people? Here's the thing. It is a bit of a controversial take, I suppose. And if you disagree, I always welcome your feedback. So give me an email, nico@2centsradio.com. Shoot it that way. Or tweet me if you can summarize your opinion in 240 characters or less. I would love to hear all about it. And because it's a conversation. And that's what we do on this podcast. Actually, we don't do conversations at all. We do one-sided monologues. And I'm able to filter out any negative criticism and paint myself as the moral arbiter of the world. Because in this hour-long audio format, I am king. There we go. Man, this has been a ride today. Let's wrap this show up. There were a few more things that I wanted to get to, but I think we're going to save that for a later date because I once again am yours, ladies and gentlemen. I'm back giving you the audio goodness you desire. I'm here to entertain. I'm here to enlighten. I'm here to inspire. I'm here to depress. Whatever emotions you experience on this podcast, well, you're going to get them more frequently. From here on out, Nico Show back to once a week. Hopefully Mondays will work. I have a very light class schedule on Mondays, so this might be the new norm here. So please, subscribe on iTunes, rate and review. Go to TooManyThoughtsMedia.com for more podcast goodness. I'll be doing those shows more frequently as well. And I am actually very much looking forward to my creative endeavors over the next several months. Exciting things around the corner because I have more time. And I've got so many ideas bouncing around, and I can't wait to share them all with you as they come. All right, so there we go. At Funny Nico tweets, Nico@2centsradio.com, as I just described. And until next week, thank you guys so much for being with me every step of the way. It's a new Nico, it's a new year, and it's the same old podcast. Next time, tune in where you, yes, you, will finally hear the story of Lord Steve. Love you so much.